I just don't even know why there aren't uprisings all over the country, and maybe there will be.
People need to start taking to the streets. This is a dictator.
You know, there needs to be unrest in the streets for as long as there is unrest in our lives.
Enemies of the state.
Show me where it says that protests are supposed to be polite and peaceful.
Do something about your dad's immigration practices, you feckless.
When they go low, we kick.
How do you resist the temptation to run up and wring her neck?
Biggest terror threat in this country is white men, most of them radicalized right up to the right.
I thought he should have punched him in the face. I said, even if you lost, he insulted your wife.
Yes.
He came down the escalator and called Mexicans rapists and murderers. He said, well, what do you think I should have done? I said, I think you should have punched him in the face and then gotten out of the race. You would have been a hero.
I'd like to punch him in the face. I said, if we were in high school, I'd take him behind the gym and beat the hell out of him.
Punch some people in the face!
When was the last time an actor assassinated a president?
They're still going to have to go out and put a bullet in Donald Trump, and that's a fact.
Look, as his character is stabbed to death.
Where is John Wilkes Booth when you need him?
I have thought an awful lot about blowing up the White House.
A Missouri state senator is under investigation by the Secret Service after saying she hopes President Trump is assassinated.
I will go and take Trump out tonight.
And if you see anybody from that cabinet in a restaurant, in a department store, at a gasoline station, you get out and you create a crowd. And you push back on them. And you tell them they're not welcome anymore, anywhere.
And sadly, the domestic enemies to our voting system and our honoring our Constitution are right at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue.
They're not going to stop before Election Day in November, and they're not going to stop after Election Day. And that should be, everyone should take note of that on both levels, that this isn't, they're not going to let up, and they should not.
If you think we're rallying now, you ain't seen nothing yet.
The legacy media and the Democrats as a whole are being held to account for their horrifically violent rhetoric leading up to the assassination attempt of our beloved president, Donald J. Trump. I'm about to show you how their monopoly over news and information officially imploded this weekend and how the days of the legacy media have indeed come to an end. Hey, gang, it's me, Dr. Steve, your Patriot Professor, here to help you stay sane in these insane times. So make sure to smack that bell and subscribe button. Also, don't forget, we've got our Call to Arms event, our very own free online event this Wednesday, July 17th at 7 p.m. Eastern. It's a completely free event that'll show you your own crucial role that only you can play in securing Trump's massive victory in November. We've already had over 1,000 of you RSVP, and if you click on that link below right now to secure your spot, we're going to send you our Courageous Conservatives book bundle absolutely free as a thank you for taking your part in Trump's landslide victory seriously. So don't wait. Click on that link below to register today. So now we come to the third dynamic in all of this. In our first video, we looked at the miracle that unfolded before our eyes on that Pennsylvania farm grounds at exactly 6:11 p.m. on Saturday. Make sure you check out that video. It's so inspiring. In our second video, we looked at what many are calling the apocalyptic failures of the Secret Service, that is, many commentators saying they were either incompetent or complicit. Now, in this video, we need to talk about the third dimension in all of this, and that, of course, is the legacy media, or more particularly, the utterly and abysmally humiliating way they've been covering this historic event, this miracle, number one, and number two, their role and the role of the political left as a whole in creating the very conditions that led to this assassination attempt in the first place. So let's start with how the legacy media has been covering what happened on Saturday. And I'm actually being generous with calling this news coverage. Here's how CNN first broke the news. If you went to their homepage on Saturday evening, I kid you not, you would have seen a headline at the top right corner, didn't even make the marquee as it were. Secret Service rushes Trump off stage after he falls at rally. According to CNN, Trump fell, and Secret Service agents had to rush him off stage. That was CNN, the most distrusted name in fake news. The AP and the Washington Post originally reported Trump escorted away after loud noises at a Pennsylvania rally. Yeah, loud noises. I guess a nearby heavy metal concert scared Trump away. ABC News, Trump rushed off stage after disruption at rally. A freaking disruption. Now, thankfully, there were some exceptions, such as the Time magazine cover over the weekend that clearly and faithfully, as you can see, captured the historic moment at hand. But while the legacy media at large was wasting the world's time with their asinine headlines and idiotic dithering, the world was finding out what was really happening on X, formerly known as Twitter. Gang, this was the event that put X at the center of the digital information universe. Even the new owner, Elon Musk, said as much. He tweeted out, quote, "I tried using both X and legacy media this weekend, but legacy media was so far behind and wrong that it was pointless. When something's wrong on X, it's corrected very fast, but it stays wrong for hours to days on legacy media." And I think we all know why the legacy media, has so embarrassingly covered this assassination attempt the way they have. I was reading Pastor Doug Wilson's take on this over at Blog and Mad Blog, and I think he said it best. It was clear that the legacy media did not want to admit what the gods of political campaigns were in the process of giving to Trump. In other words, every bloviating moment since 6:11 p.m. on J13 has been deliberately intended to try to quell, to try to minimize the utterly massive political landslide in the making here. Everything they're saying, every picture, you name it, everything has been calculated to try desperately to at least put some limit to the massive landslide that is even now in the works. We'll, of course, be talking about this in detail on Wednesday night at our free Call to Arms event, so make sure to click on that link below and register right now. You're not going to want to miss it. But for me, it's not even how the legacy media is embarrassingly covering this historic event that's most consequential here. In fact, I don't believe it's consequential at all. I believe they're largely irrelevant at this point. It's their blatant, obvious, and explicit hypocrisy. And this goes for the left as a whole. What's really happened as of this weekend is the political left has been exposed for being the utter rank hypocrites they've always been. Remember, the basic moral premise that every single Democrat and every single member of the legacy media has been lecturing us on for years now is violent rhetoric leads to what? Violent rhetoric leads to what? Violent acts, right? Violent rhetoric inspires violent acts. We've been here. This has been the whole premise of Jack Smith's case against Trump in terms of the J6 case. There would never have been a supposed insurrection if President Trump hadn't first called for it. Trump's violent rhetoric led to violent acts. That's been a consistent, constant refrain from the legacy media, not just for Trump, but for the whole of the MAGA movement, for all of us. You may have heard about this, but MSNBC's Joe Scarborough's show was pulled from airing this morning in view of what happened over the weekend. Perhaps it's because Scarborough said things like this.
If they voted for Trump in 16, whatever. They voted for Trump in 20. They knew exactly what they were doing. If they vote for Donald Trump in 2024, they're knowingly voting for a fascist. They're voting for a racist. They're voting for somebody that wants to put this country 200 years in the back.
His supporters have no excuse anymore. There is no excuse. He is a racist. He is blatant about his racism. He is not using a dog whistle. to send out his racist messages. He is using a foghorn, denying that he knows who David Duke is, denying that he knows that the KKK was a malignant force in American history, equating neo-Nazis and white supremacists to Democratic protesters, trying to undo democratic progress across Europe. You cannot support this man.
And frankly, gang, that's tame when it comes to what we hear on a daily basis from the borderline illiterates over at MSNBC.
So I think there's two lanes here. There's the number one, it's morning in America. It's never been better here. And contrast Donald Trump nighttime in America and start to use the F word, the fascist word. Don't just say democracy is hanging on a thread. Say we will be a fascist state. Start putting cutting commercials together with Mussolini in it, with Hitler in it. I know everybody's going, oh, you can't do that. You can't do that. We will become a fascist state. Use the F word for Donald Trump, morning in America for Joe Biden.
This statement that the president, the ex-president made, as I said, is part of a pattern. He was in favor of keeping up the Confederate monuments. He talked about back in the day when somebody said something to him about David Duke, but he didn't really know, but he tipped his hat. Mm-hmm. He talked about in Charlottesville there being, you know, both sides to that issue. This is a tip of the hat to white supremacy and white nationalism, which is unfortunately a very important part of the ex-president's base, which goes to show you what in the world he's going to do if he gets elected again. And he's already told you he's going to be a dictator for the day. He wants to make sure that as the president, he could order SEAL Team 6 to go shoot political opponents.
Oh, we can't forget this one.
Y'all just tell me who the nominee is going to be. Let me know when you guys are finished fighting amongst yourselves who I got to vote for in November to keep Hitler out the White House. That's all I want to know. Who I got to vote for to keep Hitler out the White House. Y'all do your thing. Play in traffic all you want in front of these Republicans, acting a fool in front of these people instead of privately declaring your stuff. But don't text me no more because I'm not taking no more of these texts. Just let me know when you guys are finished figuring it out, Democrats, because I know y'all the freak out people. Go ahead and freak out. Have your conversation. And then let me know who I got to vote for to keep Hitler out the White House. That's it. I'm done.
Now, gang, these are the people who have been lecturing us nonstop these last 7.5 years on how violent rhetoric inexorably leads to violent acts. And yet somehow, some way, they all presume in their own narcissistic, twisted world that they are somehow immune, that there is some kind of special exemption for them from this supposed law of the universe that they themselves use to condemn us. If the fundamental premise that violent rhetoric leads to violent acts is true, then how much more is this the case with the media's constant stigmatizing of Trump as another Hitler who's about to destroy our way of life? How has anything that Trump has said thus far even come close to comparing to the inviting the particular kind of violence associated with taking out that Nazi dictator? I mean, Victor Davis Hanson said it best. If the common referent day after day on the left is that Trump is another Hitler, such as the recent New Republic cover where Trump is literally photoshopped as Hitler, then it seems reckless not to imagine an unhinged or young shootist believing that by taking out someone identical to one of the great mass murderers in history, he would be applauded for his violence, right? I mean, by the way, isn't that what we were seeing in that montage at the beginning of the video? The left applauding protesters for their violence? Whoever said protesting was supposed to be peaceful? So is their logic, Hanson goes on to say, so is their logic shoot Trump and save 6 million from the gas chambers? I mean, after all, the New Republic defiantly explained their Hitler-Trump cover photo this way. Today, we at the New Republic think we can spend this election year in one of two ways. We can spend it debating whether Trump meets the 9 or 17 points that define fascism, or we could spend it saying, look, he's damn close enough, we'd better fight. Well, New Republic, Recently, someone took you up on your argument that Trump was damn close enough to Hitler, and so he likewise chose to fight, albeit with a semi-automatic rifle. And gang, just to underscore this, just to drive this home, this rhetoric, this ultra-violent and repulsive stigmatization of Trump and the MAGA movement as Nazis, as fascist, as Hitler, as a threat to our democracy and our way of life and our republic, this has not been merely on the periphery of either the media's opinion or Biden's campaign. Gang, this has been at the epicenter of both. And yet in the end, all the legacy media and liberals have done is completely and totally undermine themselves by placing themselves in an inescapable dilemma. You ready for this? Matt Walsh brilliantly called this dilemma out. The Democrats are in a real conundrum. If Trump is really an evil supervillain dictator who wants to destroy our system of government or whatever, then assassinating him would be perfectly morally justified. But they don't want to justify this, which means they're confessing that everything they said about him for 10 years was nonsense. They either have to openly defend this assassination attempt or admit they're full of shit. There's no good option. They're screwed. Either way, they're screwed. And they only have their own violent, reckless rhetoric to blame.